Okay, well, welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. I believe it's episode 90 friggin' 8. And we're back with the whole crew this week. I'm very glad to be returning to the show. I was basically like, felt last week like I'd been swallowing knives. And the doctor gave me lots of, they gave me steroids and Vicodin for the pain.
Awesome. Nice.
So bad.
Yeah. That's a party right there.
So I was kind of messed up last Monday. You didn't want to hear me. I feel a lot better now, and I actually have brought my friend Kevin on the show. I mention Kevin all the time because he plays games with me. But
yeah, hi.
Hey, Kevin. So yeah, this is Kevin Silvis, and he's a good friend of mine. And we brought him on because later in the show we're going to talk about adventure games, like PC style adventure games, and now Wii style adventure games. I guess they're sort of becoming the same thing. So Kevin is an expert in PC adventure games, and he brought a list with him of all the ones he's played, and this isn't even complete, is it?
No.
This is a scary, scary list, okay? He is a connoisseur, so he's going to be great for this. We actually tried to do this topic several months ago with Carl and Obi, and it was a disaster. Actually, the show went really well, and then at the end, Carl's like, my audio got corrupted, and so we never did publish the show. It was like one of those weeks where we didn't have a show because it just got so screwed up.
Yeah, that was really disappointing.
Was that the week where Carl tried to do his own?
Yeah,
like,
that
solo
was it. That's right.
Substance. That was even worse. He would have been better off just posting all of our audio together without his.
I appreciated the effort. At the time, as a listener of the show and a big fan, I appreciated the effort.
He wanted to get something out there. Yeah, it was a big technical disaster. It was a real shame. We're going to give it another go.
I think next time that happens, we should do like a montage show, like kind of like the
clip show. That they do to pad out seasons of television in the U.S. Yeah.
Exactly.
See, I'm already saving all the best of stuff to mock the show horribly at the end when you don't all give me a stinger. So I mean, I'm not going to blow my resources now.
Yeah, hopefully we'll have something to that effect on the 100th episode, which at this point is going to include like every idea we've ever had about the podcast.
It's going to be a five-hour-long podcast.
Yeah. 5 hours long. We'll have like 25 special guests.
We're hiring an editor now?
Yeah, exactly.
Shifts.
We'll split it up into pieces, and then you can work on a different piece every day of the week, James.
Oh, good.
And then we could get the 101st episode out before the 100th.
102nd and 103rd.
Right. So anyway, we'll start off with new business as always, and James is going to get started on that.
Business. All right. So last week I went on what might be my second longest tirade about any one game to date.
I see that was classic.
That was funny, dog.
Yeah, oh, that was brilliant. I love the way, I can't believe in retrospect I said catharsis before you opened your mouth about that, because that really delivered on it.
Yeah, that was an experience that I needed. Unfortunately, it was. But unfortunately, the game wasn't actually done at that point.
Oh, it's like, Jason Voorhees or something?
I still had about 7 more hours of game to play after that.
Dear God, are you finally finished with it now?
I am done with all the story quests, yes.
You should just quit playing, dude.
Yeah, just stop, man. Just stop. I've already, it's not cool anymore.
I stopped after I finished the story quests. Yeah, I think
you've gone above and beyond the Call of Duty.
Absolutely. I wanted to say I can definitively review this game. I don't want anybody impeding my ability saying I reviewed the game only after 15 hours. Because
indeed, which I got some shit about that, about Mario Kart.
I reviewed it for 30. So we're just going to say that that's done. Yeah. But having wiped all that anger out of my system... and then had some come back. I'm just going to say right now, if you buy both versions of this game, I hope they somehow find a way to kill you with the packaging.
like
traps.
Like there'll be a bomb in it?
I hope like the packaging closes on your hand in just such a way that it causes like an artery to split or something.
You're giving them ideas for Saw 5 here, James.
They
don't need any
Nintendo does not accept unsolicited ideas from their fans.
Saw 5 could just be someone playing this game, and it'll be more horrific than anything that has ever happened on that series.
Well, James, why don't you move past the pain and tell us about what else you've been doing?
All right, so for review, literally the day I finished that abomination, another game came in, Speed Racer, the video game. Now, I do like the fact that they put the video game in there, just in case you thought maybe this DS game was the movie released on the DS format or something. I'm not sure. Yeah. But it's an arcade racer with tournament mode. First off, let me point out that it is beautiful for a DS title, of course. It is absolutely stunning. I'm just shocked every time I turn it on and I see the cities and the tracks and things that you're racing through. The speed which the game goes by, the fact the frame rate is perfectly smooth. You're moving through fully populated with buildings, not people, cities on tracks that have artistic design put into them and loops and crazy stuff going on. And, you know, there's other cars going by that have unique designs. It's just amazing.
And the game, does it play sort of like F-Zero or Trackmania?
It plays exactly like a mix of F-Zero and Trackmania. Hmm. Minus the checkpoint system. It's basically Trackmania with F-Zero combat mechanics. And the AI in a racing game is good on a DS game. We're going to get to that later, I'm sure. But it has, you know, competent AI that you'll have to challenge for spots and will challenge you for your spot in the harder levels. There's about 18 tournaments across 3 difficulty modes, and they comprise of 3 to 5 races. And it's, you know, its mechanics work. The only real problem with it is more related to the DS not having analog control, so there's only one level of turning unless you're drifting. So you're either turning hard or not turning at all. That's kind of obnoxious if you're used to controlling racing with analog. But besides that, the game itself works very well. Graphically, it's quite good, and there's a fair amount of length. My biggest complaint with the game, and this might be one of the only complaints I list in the review, is that it needed online play, because it's not very much... It's fun on your own, but for a fairly limited amount of time. And the only way to play this game multiplayer is 1 to 6 player, but it's multi-cart. So if you can find 6 people who each own this game, you work for the developer.
Yeah, exactly. That's so many DS games have that problem. They put in these multiplayer modes, and you got to figure somebody spent a lot of time creating that multiplayer mode and making all the wireless code work. And nobody plays that stuff.
Yeah,
it's like you're just not going to find other people who have a copy of that obscure game.
Mm-hmm. And the real kicker here is that I'm not sure what I'm going to do when it gets to the recommendation part, because the game is good. The game's quite good. But I'm not quite sure how I can justify saying, you know, go buy this game. It's great, but you're going to play it by yourself. You know, it begs for multiplayer. And the reality of the situation is the tournament mode, for example, the tournament will be comprised of a few races. You have to complete a tournament in one sitting. You can't save between races and stop. So some of these races go on for 7 minutes. So these tournaments, can be up to a half hour long or longer. And that might not be real conducive for handheld gaming. And the fact of the matter is there's a Wii version out there of this game, which honestly I don't think has as good art design, although it still looks pretty good. Certainly the tracks aren't as ornate with things going on outside the track, but the mechanics are slightly different. It's less of a kart racer, more of like a trick racer. And, you know, I'm almost torn by recommending that instead if you can play it, even though at least listening to Nick, who is reviewing that game, it's actually inferior to the DS version from the looks of it, just because it makes more sense on the platform, if cool. That makes sense.
All right. Well, Greg, what have you got, man?
Oh, well, I suppose I did mention this in passing last week, but I should wrap it up with my last bi-weekly update. Last week was not week 8 of the wait for a release date for Brawl. Because they finally let it slip back during week 7 that it was going to be June 27th, so yeah, we can all put that behind us. And
I never got to use my graphic.
No, the wait for the wait is over. So
now it's just the wait.
Now it's just the wait till the end of June. So,
James had a really nice Smash Brothers Hunger Strike logo drawn up. That
yeah, it was brilliant.
See, they gave you 7 weeks to do it. Come on.
I can't we can reuse rushed. It for something in the future.
Yeah, I'm sure the next time there's some colossal title that we get horridly jobbed on, then we can put it to work somewhere. So that's behind us. In terms of what I've been playing, usual stuff, Smash Brothers, Mario Kart and whatnot. But there was a bit of a shake-up of Virtual Console over here this week because after bemoaning the lack of TurboGrafx games since February... that had gone on. They're having another one of these like import festivals, they call them, like where they sort of release a lot of import games at once, which is something they do here rather than sort of random kind of spread that goes on in the US. And in that, there's a lot of TurboGrafx games, most of them shooters, including yes. the famously homoerotic Chowaniki.
Chowaniki!
Are you serious?
I saw that on a list at Gap, and I was like, are you freaking kidding me? Yeah. They're putting out Chowaniki on Virtual Console.
It's coming. Oh, it is. Yeah. It's on its way. It isn't out yet. They've kind of like...
That'll never be released in America.
We're not entirely sure that it's the whole list yet, but they've put out a list for this import festival, and it's all stuff from, say, all stuff on the Genesis and the TurboGrafx. Well, not all of them are just Hudson games, I don't think, because some of them are like ports of Konami games and stuff. So, when the first week came out, one of the games was Gradius 2, the arcade Gradius 2, that was never released on consoles, I think, in the US until like it was in Gradius Collection and things like that, years and years later. But this is the TurboGrafx CD version of that, and it, apparently it's quite close to the original arcade, and the soundtrack's really good because it was on a CD, if you like Gradius kind of soundtrack, which I generally do. But when that happened, the excitement was, well, is Rondo of Blood going to be part of it? You know, that's another Konami sort of TurboGrafx CD game, but it doesn't look like it is, sadly. And
That'll be coming eventually, though.
It'll be coming eventually, really, but the thing is, the last one of these import festivals that they had in Europe was in September of last year. So if they're going to keep it confined to these kind of very narrow periods that they do it, and it isn't in this one, one has to wonder how far in the future we're going to have to wait for that, at least in Europe.
Hey, Hunger Strike.
It's always an option.
I'm not sure what kind of graphic I could make for that, to be honest.
I exerted my will eventually. So, and the other thing, of course, is that the other possibility that we might have entertained for this is that with the recent news that Earthbound was rated by the ESRB, that was never released in Europe at all. So none of the other games would be released.
Oh my god, are you shitting me?
That's
so
brutal.
Again, that could have been in this festival because it is not just Japanese games, there's also North American games in it that didn't come to Europe. So those were the two that people were hoping for, and then the list came out and it was more shooters and a pool game, and it wasn't everything.
But you get Chowaniki.
Chowaniki's not out yet. That's like
in but you're gonna get it.
I may well do.
I want
it sounds like
Chowaniki.
It's out of the closet.
That was a horrible joke, and you should be ashamed for making it.
No, Chowaniki is... There's like a whole series of Chowaniki in Japan.
Yeah, and not all of them are like this. Some of them are like...
There's a fighting game. There's some really weird shit. And there... I forget the term, but there's a term for Chowaniki. It's in this kind of genre in Japan that translates to shit games. And they're purposefully bad games. They're like B-movies, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really the only video game equivalent that I can think of, that these movies are like, the creators know they're not good.
Yeah.
And the fans know they're not good, but they're funny because they're so poorly made and they're so outrageous.
Yeah.
And Chowaniki is probably the most famous example of this, and it's such a like a cult, it's like an urban legend of Chowaniki. Actually, there's one of the Chowaniki games is on the 1UP. What do they call it when they review the really bad games?
Broken Pixels.
Broken Pixels.
Right.
So if you go to 1UP's video podcast and find Broken Pixels, one of the episodes has I think it has Chowaniki 2, the fighting game. It's really funny stuff, though. It's very, very funny. So you should check that out.
I kind of want to see Chowaniki come to the U.S. just because I want to see what the ESRB will do with it.
The content descriptors would be amazing.
We haven't seen the
the name of that genre is Kusoge.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, the Gradius 2 I downloaded. That's quite fun if you like the Gradius games and you haven't played it on collection or anything like that. I mean, it's quite similar to 3, but it probably runs a bit more smoothly on the Turbo CD than Gradius 3.
How could it not?
Yeah. I mean, even though there's quite a lot going on as well, and I mean, it's classic Gradius. You know, you get to certain points, and if you haven't got all the options and all the firepower, you're going to find it extremely hard going. I mean, it is what it is, but if you like that sort of thing, I'm sure you could enjoy the sort of the arcade sort of perfectness of it. And I think some of the other ones that are in it are like Final Soldier, which is one of the Star Soldier games that didn't come to the West, and Star Parodia, which is basically Parodius but applied to the Star Soldier series. They just ripped the idea off. They just totally ripped the idea off and put it for that. So yeah, I mean, it's not as exciting as it could be, but we're not totally sure what the actual final lineup's going to be yet. So maybe there'll be a few surprises, but it looks like that's going to be what it is, just Genesis and Turbo CD games.
So out of the list, about how many are shooters? Just out of curiosity.
It's at least 4, I think. Yeah, at least 4. At least
awesome.
Four. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, to be fair though, I mean, it sounds like you guys are having a little better development on the virtual console front than America right now.
Yeah, well, yeah, it hasn't been great, has it? But I mean, one interesting thing is though that the Do Re Mi Fantasy or whatever it was, you know, the Mylon Secret Castle sequel.
Yeah.
That is not that's been out in America for some time, and it's a Hudson game, and it's not in this list. So when are we going to get it? What's up with that?
Yeah, I gotta think they will do that eventually, as long as they have the rights to it.
I just find that kind of bizarre. It's like, here we are, it's like Hudson making up the vast majority of these games that are coming out during this period. It's an import title, it's already been in the US, and it's not on this list. I mean, that's very perplexing.
It is, yeah. That's a good game, too. I definitely recommend that, so I hope you guys get it soon.
Yeah.
Well, we better move on, and John is next.
I've been playing a little bit of a bunch of stuff. Okay, well, first, like, the big news of this week, the Life Signs review is almost finished.
Oh, dear. Oh, my God, yeah, no.
Almost.
I'll leave it when I see it.
I have it written. All I have to do is just come up with the pros, cons, and the score, and it's done.
Pros, it takes years to review.
Man, it's so rewarding, actually, to nearly finish a review. It's amazing.
It's a good feeling. You'll get addicted to it.
He'll get addicted to nearly finishing his reviews.
There's a lot of people who are addicted to that.
Yeah, exactly.
I know you're listening, Carl.
Let's see. Other stuff. I've just been playing a little bit of Mario Kart Wii, which I'm really enjoying. I really like the Wii Wheel, and I'm very impressed by that. And I've been playing a little bit of Okami. But since Life Science kind of took precedence this week, sorry, boys. You know, Okami's gone on the back burner. And that's pretty much it. I'm looking forward to picking up Spiderwick. Coming out, you know, coming down the pipe. Get that review out of the way. You know, it's good times, man. It's
Maybe
times.
We'll get the review in before the DVD comes out.
Shut up.
Every copy of the DVD comes with a free copy of John's review of the game. It's a little promo we're doing. So that's all, John?
Yeah, I mean, other stuff, of course. You know, I got Grand Theft Auto 4.
Well, you got to talk about that, man.
Well, I mean, the one
I'm jealous.
Comment, really? You don't have it yet?
No, I don't have a 360. I'm
waiting. Yeah, you don't. That's right. You don't have
price drop and or Blu-ray. And I'm waiting for them to do anything that makes sense with the hardware.
Yeah, really.
Right now, there's like 5 different ways Microsoft could please me enough to buy the system. And any one of them would be fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's great. I mean, it's just like you think it is. Grand Theft Auto. I mean, it's the actual gameplay is very similar to all the other ones. But what consistently impresses me about those games is the quality of writing that goes into those games and the quality of the satire and parody in those games, which amazes me because I mean they're designed in Scotland. But they have this pitch perfect satire of America and American society. It's amazing. I mean, you have of course, you know, the kind of soundtrack and all that sort of stuff, and you know, you listen to the DJs and all that while you're driving around, which is incredibly funny in itself. But they also have in your apartment the TV shows that are like actual complete 3-minute, you know, scripted sitcom style things that are just amazing. Like there was one I was watching called the Men's Room, and it's a parody of The Man Show, and the set. It nice. Has, I forget what the two hosts are named. Like Baz, who is this guy that wears like, you know, a wife beater, and he's his answer to everything is beating people up. And then there's this other kind of very the other co-host is this little effeminate guy, who is, you know, just plays off of Baz, the big hulking dude. But at the start of the show, it's classic because at the back of the set they have these four urinals. And it's like, welcome to the men's room. And they come out and they take a pee. And then they come out and they're like, hi, I'm Baz and I'm so-and-so. And they sit down and start the show. It's just classic. Like, it's beautiful.
It's amazing that you're having this much fun watching a TV show that's inside of a game.
Exactly. That's my point. That's how good they are. I mean,
God,
you sit there.
I want that game so, so, so bad.
Yeah, it's great.
It hurts, man.
The only thing I haven't tried out is the Xbox Live multiplayer. I haven't tried that yet, but I'm going to get into that sometime this week. And that's it, man.
Cool. All right, Kevin, you're up.
All right, well, I haven't really been playing very many new games, I guess, besides Mario Kart, but I don't own that. I've been playing it at Johnny's, it's pretty fun. I like the Wii Wheel also. It's definitely not as easy as the Nunchuck option, but it has its own appeal, I think.
We had a good time when we played together and we went online together.
Yeah.
That was really fun because you picked up the first controller and you were playing with my Mii. So you were playing as Johnny. And so I had to, like, I kind of logged in as a guest and it asked me which Mii I wanted. So I picked Jesus. and so I ended up, like, totally rocking out people online. And I would grow giant. And I'd become giant Jesus and then I'd, like, run over and squash. And I would say, Jesus just fucked you up.
Wow.
It just made me proud of my religion that I can do that and not feel bad about it.
If only there were voice chat.
I know.
You are the reason we don't have voice chat, unfortunately.
Yeah, right. I'm griefing with Jesus. So.
Yeah, so Mario Kart is fun. I've been playing quite a bit of Puzzle Quest. I recently got a DS. I had been borrowing one of my friends for a really long time, and I just broke down and bought one finally. And I've been restricting myself to only playing the DS when I'm on the bus, which is about like a half-hour bus ride. So it makes playing the game, it adds a new element to it, because if I lose a battle, it might not be an entire day before I get to try again. It just adds an extra dimension to that. I've been playing Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess. I'm going through it for the first time, and I'm sort of taking my time with that too. I've been playing it for I don't know how many game hours, not that many.
Pretty far, I think. I think you're about close to halfway through, maybe.
Yeah.
Because you've gotten like the, you've done like the wolf teardrop thing like three times, right?
Right.
Yeah, so you're getting pretty close to like the halfway point.
Yeah.
Do you still feel like it's too slow, like it just takes too long to open up?
Yeah, it's just a little frustrating. The beginning of the game was incredibly frustratingly slow. I just didn't feel like I could keep going.
I kept telling him, just keep going. It gets better. It gets better. It gets better. Yeah. But I mean, if you're not having a pretty good time by this point, I'm not sure that it's going to like magically transform for you. Like it does gradually get better and it opens up more and you have more choices, but it's not like totally revolutionary at some point. It's not like a tipping point, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, I am enjoying playing.
That's good.
But, I just tried Johnny's copy of Star Tropics on the Virtual Console, and I kind of like that. I like the jumping thing, the jumping mechanism. It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It adds a whole new element to Zelda's type of old school Zelda type game.
Yeah. Yeah. Star Tropics is like a really weird. It's almost like an alternate universe Zelda game.
I found it hard to get into, really. I just really lost interest in it I don't know. I don't think I felt the same way. I think with Earthbound too, because I think I do actually still have a copy of Earthbound for the Super NES, but I don't know. I just found it hard to really get into.
Well, John, if you don't like Earthbound, you should put that on eBay before it comes out on Virtual Console.
Yeah, seriously.
You can still get you can get like $60 for it.
Yeah,
like,
eBay.
Because that's a lot of money. This is where it comes to
the test, though. If John does that, does he get a link in the article as well?
Of course. Yeah.
That's a good point. The thing is with that, I remember like the actual package that I have is the one that comes with the player's guide, if you remember that one. That might have been the only package, but that's the one.
Yeah, it was the only package. It was a really strange marketing thing they did where they sold the game with the strategy guide packed in with it rather than try to sell it to you separately, which is what they usually did. Yeah. I think they were afraid. It was like, you know, it was Nintendo's first major like self-published RPG in America. I mean, they published Final Fantasy II, which is really Final Fantasy IV for Square. But they really just kind of distributed that. Like it was clear that it was a Square game. The Square logo came up, and it was clearly not a Nintendo-made game.
Yeah.
And then they did the same with like Dragon Warrior 1 back on the NES. And remember famously they ordered like a million copies of it, and they couldn't sell them for shit. So they decided to give them away for free with Nintendo Power. and it was genius because they created a fan base for hardcore Japanese RPGs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me. That's how I got my copy of it. Was free from Nintendo Power.
Yeah, it was like totally not what they originally intended to do, but it worked out so beautifully.
Yeah, the one thing I can recall with Earthbound is that you really did get the idea that they really had no idea how to market it and really weren't sure if people would even like it.
Well, it's a totally bizarre game.
That's the thing.
It's very strange.
It's not even something that an American audience could really relate to. For the most part, it's not like something.
You know, I think it's really strange in Japanese culture too. It's a strange
game by design. That was their goal. I mean, yeah.
It is meant to be odd. It's meant to subvert the expectations of a Japanese RPG. Mm-hmm. But I guess what I was saying about the strategy guide is it was really the first true Nintendo RPG that they released in America. This was before Mario RPG, which is much easier to understand. And I guess they were really afraid that people would buy it and just return it to the store because they couldn't figure it out. Mm-hmm. So they gave everybody the strategy guide. So anyway, yeah, man, you should sell that and get you some Skrilla.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'm half tempted to bleep out the phrase Skrilla just so it sounds more dirty than it is.
More money. I got plenty, man. Okay, I guess it's my turn for new business, and I just finished a couple days ago reviewing Mario Kart Wii. So there was
a week
where that's pretty much all I played, which was hard because I had three other new games that I also wanted to be playing, and I really couldn't because I had to devote a lot of time to Mario Kart. I've enjoyed Mario Kart. I think I'm going to enjoy it more now that the pressure to review it and the deadline is off of me and I can just sort of play it for an hour a week or whatever. You know, it can go online or when people come over, we'll pop it in. And that's really the way it's meant to be enjoyed. I had to go through the process. And this is one of those situations where doing the review sometimes gives you a bad experience that normal people who are not reviewing the game don't have. And so it makes it hard for them to relate to your review. But you know, I had to go through this game, and I basically had to play through Grand Prix over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So I could unlock the stuff, so I could see all the tracks, so I could get the characters, so I could test that mode, because that's the one mode that I can really play even when nobody else is around, which was convenient because I was really sick. So I played a lot of Grand Prix, like 8 or 9 hours of it probably, and Grand Prix like really fucking blows in that game. It pisses me off. Bad, you know?
Yeah.
Especially at the 150 level. I mean, I blew through the 50 and 100 in a day.
Yeah.
And then I spent like 4 days trying to beat all the 150 CCs, which are, there are 8 of them. And I got to where I could finally get a bronze cup, but that's not good enough to unlock anything. So I have to play that fucking thing again and try to do better.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's absolutely infuriating. So that's where a lot of my negativity about the game comes from because of that experience trying to play through Grand Prix. And, you know, I remember having some of the same frustration in Double Dash and Mario Kart DS, but it wasn't nearly as bad.
See, I don't feel like the single player was that hard in Double Dash. There was a couple times where it was just, God damn it, but it wasn't that bad.
It's not that bad, and the other thing is in Double Dash you can play with a friend, which I did. And that's really fun. Like, even if the game is messing with you and it's kind of being unfair, if you're playing with another person, you can laugh about it. You're still having a good time. You're having that social aspect. Whereas if you're playing by yourself in the middle of the week, it's dark, you're lonely, you're sick, you have a fever, you're on drugs, and the computer suddenly just totally trounces upon you and has its way with you, there's nothing good to come out of that experience. It's just unpleasant, and it leaves a mark on your soul that comes out in the review.
Well, this is the thing, is what I love in your review, Johnny.
Catharsis corner round
Catharsis
two.
Corner right here. But yeah, what I love in your review, Johnny, is that you pretty much said that, you know, on its hardest settings, the only way to win is to absolutely ensure that you can't, what you said, like you can't get so far ahead that you can guarantee that even if you get hit by a blue shell and then, you know, a trio of red shells, this, that you will still win. And that's true.
Yeah. I mean, it's not uncommon to get hit by like four items in a row on the last lap. If it happened on the first lap, no big deal, but it's more likely to happen on the last lap, and then you don't have time to recover. Yep. And there's just absolutely nothing you can do. And I remember a few days ago, I was playing through, trying to get like a better trophy on one of the 150cc's, and I played through an entire race where I was in the lead. I had people shooting things at me, but there were things I could actually defend against if I had the right item, or if I didn't, then I took the hit, but you know, I dealt with it.
It's not that bad.
And I went, and like the last half of the third lap, nothing hit me. Like, I was prepared. I had like a trio of bananas or whatever. I was going to do everything I could to win, but nothing ever hit me. And I crossed the finish line and I was like, what just happened? What game am I playing?
That's it. It is just, to me, it's just probabilistic. It's, they've ratcheted up.
It is. Well,
the main way they've differentiated 150cc is they've ratcheted up the probability, the incidence of a strike from blue shells, power blocks, lightning blocks, everything else. But the point is, it's still a probability. So sometimes, you know, even the weighted coin or whatever turns up the one side. And that's the way it works. And you've just got to have the perseverance to deal with that. That's pretty much it.
But see,
I don't want to dwell too long on Mario Kart, but one other thing I want to say, and this is a question I kind of brought up in my review, and I think it would confuse some people in the talkback thread. But one of the comments I made is that, you know, Mario Kart Wii has really beautiful online features. I mean, they're not perfect. They're not up to like Xbox Live standards, but they're the best we've ever had in a Nintendo game. It's not saying much, but give credit where it's due. They put a lot of effort into this. It's very well done. And my comment was, it's a shame that they haven't done this with other games before, because I don't really feel like Mario Kart is the best example of a game that should be played online. I don't feel like it's a game that's dramatically improved by playing it online. Or I don't feel it's a game where I'm sitting there playing it and I'm just thinking, man, if only this was online, I could give it like three more points on the review. Mm-hmm. Because the online experience isn't that much different from playing against the
computer.
It's just not a deep enough game.
I felt that it was significantly different in the regard that when you're playing online, it's even in the anonymous matches, which obviously are fairly impersonal and everything, but it is like playing the game if the AI was really good and if the items weren't statistically weighted to screw you over by design. That's two of the biggest problems with the one-player game, that playing online.
I know, but that's
takes
based
out,
purely so. On the fact that the one-player game is so broken.
Exactly. So what
it
I would
doesn't
say
have
is
anything
that,
to do with the fact that Mario Kart is like a brilliant online game. And,
so what,
I'm not suggesting that like only first-person shooters make for really compelling online experiences. I think there's a lot of stuff. You know, there's WoW. There's potentially Animal Crossing. We'll see. They haven't done it yet, but I think there's a lot of potential for that. I think there are a lot of games, Pikmin I think would be fascinating, strategy games, anything where you have more interaction, more control over what's going on, there are more possibilities for what you can do. Mario Kart, all you can really do is go forward and shoot shit, and the shit you get is random. So I just don't feel like the online totally fits. I didn't feel that way in Mario Kart DS either. You know, I still to this day think Mario Kart DS is way overrated. Like, people like Mike Sklens were shitting on themselves over this game. And I bought it, and I'm like, well, this is fun. You know, I played through Grand Prix. I took it online. I played against a few people. I'm like, okay, well, there's that. It's online. That's cool. But it's not like a game that that I think I'm going to be playing online in 3 months.
It's more
months.
Of a party game than anything else.
Not even close.
But what I would say as well is that I know that, I mean, I have some particular problems with some of the way that the one-player game works in this, but the one-player games in Mario Kart have always been pretty similar. There's always been these kind of cheap rubber band elements and all this kind
except
of stuff.
In Double Dash, because you could do co-op.
Yeah.
Then it's not really one player
that's
anymore.
Not one player.
It's the same thing, but now you play it very differently.
That's fair enough, and I think that loss is a sad one. I really do. And yeah. I said before, I think there's no reason why you couldn't have a parallel mode there. Well, you know, it's
absolutely
a console game, give us more. But what I do think, therefore, is that you've got a kind of long-standing kind of issue with the Mario Kart games in terms of if you are playing it by yourself, in terms of in a room, that the online is addressing. So in the one hand, I hear what you say about maybe you don't think it's the kind of game that you necessarily think needs to be online, but it has addressed like a long-standing issue with Mario Kart for me in terms of...
I see what you're saying, Greg, but I think it addresses... I don't really think it's so much that it addresses it. It's just that they haven't broken the online play like they've broken the single player.
Because the one player is sort of cynical. It's because, well, we're trying to make it more difficult in a very cheap way. Whereas, you know, if it's online and you're competing with everybody else, well, what would be the point of shafting one person? That would just be malicious.
That's true. I guess it kind of forces Nintendo to sort of make it fair for each fair chance.
You could still debate whether so many, you know, all the items should be in there, or whether it's still a bit too crazy, or whether you'd like more customization, and those are all legitimate issues. But it is a far cry from literally having the game designed against you. Because the worst thing about that is that games are supposed to incentivize you to get better at the game. However, what Mario Kart Wii does in its one-player game is incentivize you only to play enough times to get lucky enough to win.
It's like a lottery. I agree totally.
So after in that sense, its design is poor. But the point is, the online kind of unlocks what is the innately entertaining nature of the game. It is fun racing, and I think the controls are tight and they're good, and it's fun, and the chaos can be fun if you don't feel like it's all manipulated to just hit you in the face. And
I guess what I'm trying to say is that Mario Kart is just not a game whose design allows for the human element to bring that creativity and that unpredictability that a lot of other types of games can. It's not that I'm bashing on Mario Kart here. I just think that the game, its simplicity means that playing online doesn't bring a lot of new elements to it that you couldn't get from the computer AI.
Now, what about...
AI the correct way.
Yeah, but they were unwilling to do that.
Yeah. Well, let me say this
much.
That's
all I was saying with that comment.
I don't get to play multiplayer games with friends as much as most people do, because I live fairly far away from most of my friends now. Because I spent most of college way off campus, so, you know, I mean, I only got to play with them during parties and things. So if an online mode for Mario Kart would be good for me, and I think if where there was, I'm going to say this and you're all going to gasp, voice chat? Mario Kart Wii Online would serve a really good purpose besides making up for broken AI. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
sure.
Now, Johnny, what would you think about F-Zero being online?
Must be online.
I don't really see F-Zero being
wrong.
Any different than Mario Kart.
You are wrong, sir. Because the AI in F-Zero is a lot of times the opposite situation. They're so freaking good that it just blows the mind. I mean, there are tracks in F-Zero GX that I refuse to believe any human could ever complete, but the AI completes it like it's the easiest thing ever created. I want the fallacy of other people having to play a track that is designed by sadists.
No, what I'm suggesting is say Smash Brothers. To me, Smash Brothers is a game that that is different online. It is different playing against people than against the computer, because people have their own personal styles that are very, very different from anything the computer would do.
Mario Kart,
and also Smash Brothers is like a sandbox game. I mean, the possibilities for what happens in a Smash Brothers fight are so vast that it's different every time, and you can share. Basically, to me, Smash Bros. Is like a comedy game.
Well,
it's like let's put these characters in this little diorama, and we'll flip the switch, and we'll see what crazy, hilarious shit happens. And that's the way my friend Taylor and I used to play it every day for 3 years. And basically, we'd sit there and just laugh at it, because and we were really good, and we had a lot of fun playing against each other. But we would do things to each other while playing the game that the computer would never, ever, ever do. So I think there's a lot of potential for that sort of thing in Smash Brothers, and it's a really damn shame that the technical aspects of the online features in Smash Brothers
are
so bad.
Well,
because I think that is a game that lends itself more to interesting online interaction than Mario Kart does.
But see, I don't think that's what you end up with online with Brawl. You end up with people who are hardcore, you know, I'm going to beat you and then I'm going to make you ashamed by taunting you afterwards.
I'm not talking about anonymous, man. I'm talking about, like, playing with friends.
Friend matches, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if it had voice chat.
Brawl is a game that I really want to play online and I can't, whereas Mario Kart is a game that I now can play online, but I'm kind of indifferent to
it. You can play you can play Brawl online better than I can.
Yeah.
I'm the only person on this podcast who can claim physically can't play it online.
Yeah, there's something up with your Wii. I mean, have you added my Wii number? Because you're still not showing up on that either.
No, because remember, you're a friend on mine, and I'm not on yours, remember?
That's what I'm saying, but does this just go beyond Smash? It's just like, is your Wii just like strangely asymmetrical on 20 weeks?
I think my Wii just might hate the internet. It might just be like, I don't want to do this.
I finally ponied up, and I bought a LAN adapter from Nintendo, and I got about 50 feet of Cat 5. So I'm going to wire my Wii. I'm going to bring it back here next to my computer setup, and I'm going to wire the damn thing to see if I can actually play Brawl online. Because I'm tired. I'm tired of not being able to play online.
Since it's next to your computer, you can use Skype.
And silence befalls the crowd.
That's right.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Hush the crowd.
I know. Voice chat and Smash Brothers together, it's kind of a scary thought.
I'm not even ready for it.
God forbid.
I see now why Nintendo doesn't want us to have it. We can't handle the potential for that.
But now, the one thing I will say before we move on, Johnny, is do you think that the whole thing with, you know, you're saying Brawl is more kind of suited to online than, you know, Mario Kart is. Do you think that that's something inherent to the racing genre? I mean, is there another racing game, like Burnout or something like that? Like, you know, Burnout Paradise, it's maybe better?
Well, I haven't played Burnout Paradise, but I think because of the open world design of it, it probably is much more interesting online than Mario Kart Wii is, because Mario Kart Wii is so linear.
Yeah.
There's a fairly limited number of things that could happen on the track.
Yeah.
Because you are trying to get from the beginning of the track to the end, and there's like five items, you know. But Burnout Paradise is more of a thing where, and it has all these modes where you try to do like the craziest trick you can do off of this ramp or whatever, and people are going to get more creative with that kind of thing. So I don't know. I haven't played it, but that's what I'd like to think. Whenever I do finally get a 360, Burnout Paradise will be one of the first things I get, because I really enjoy Burnout. But yeah, I think the traditional lap 1, lap 2, lap 3 kind of racing game, it doesn't interest me to play that online.
Yeah.
I'm not competitive enough to be like the best, and I don't really want to be. And again, it's really too simple. The gameplay is too simple for me to care about doing it online.
Yeah, I mean, that was beef with Mario Kart DS was the whole snaking thing made it so that it catered to people that were that kind of, you know, racing nerd sort of, I want to get, you know, the sub 1 minute time on this track. So, you know, it kind of excluded everybody that didn't care about that.
Mario Kart DS did have things AI would never do. Snaking the entire freaking course.
That's a good point, snaking the entire track.
I mean, there are absolutely pitfalls, you know, with this, and it has to be carefully monitored. But, you know, snaking is obviously something was not insurmountable. They did a really good job of getting rid of that. And I think the power sliding in Mario Kart Wii is actually more interesting and more satisfying than the old way of doing it. I'm totally cool with what they did with that. It's just, you know, they did fix that aspect of online. Like I said, there's nothing wrong with the online play of Mario Kart Wii. I just don't find it terribly interesting. But, you know, so it seems like some people are way, way into it. Greg, you're definitely more a fan of it than I am.
Well, I just think my point is this, in terms of if you like Mario Kart, the central concept of it, but then you're not necessarily always going to be able to get people to come and play with you. It is by far the best sort of, if you look at it as a utility to which to extract enjoyment from this template, it's by far the most effective tool at doing that they've ever had, because the one player games have been shit basically,
right?
A lot
yeah.
of the time,
yeah,
or very limited. Because, so you know, I mean, Double Dash did it one way with co-op, and that's cool. But if you can't have the dependability of getting a person to come and play it with you, then online is probably even, you know, is just, if you've set up, is accessible, and you can just get on it anytime you like and get the fun out of it that you, like you said, I mean, it is, some of it is just because they've done a bad job of doing that in the one player game. But it still stands that for Mario Kart, I think it's a big deal. So if you like the game, I think it's a big deal.
Cool. Well, we need to move on. I have played other games. I mentioned that I had three other new games practically the day that I got Mario Kart. I got like four new games at once. Part of that is because I got a new DS from the site, from Nintendo, actually, on the promise that I would review some DS games this summer. So, John, I'm sure you'll hold me to that.
Send him the bad ones. If there's another Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, it's his.
Yeah, if they release the Leaf version or the yellow version.
Yeah, the first game I'm going to have you review is called Life Signs. It's really, really good.
I bet I could finish it before you will.
I challenge you to a Life Signs off.
It's a review off. So, everybody step back.
Yeah. No, I will review Trauma Center 2 for you, though.
Sure.
Yeah, bet.
I'm sure there's other demand for that. But so what I did was, and by the way, I should have brought my stack. Can you go get it, Kevin? My stack of empty DS cart cases over there. I wanted to share with you guys the list of all the games I lost with my DS,
because
it is freaking heartbreaking. But what I did was I went through all the other DS games that I did still have that I just basically had not played in 2 years, and just kind of decided, okay, these are good games, but I'm never going to play them again. And these are good games that I may actually play again. So I kind of separated them out that way. And I went and traded in like 6 or 7 DS games and got enough credit to buy Contra 4 for DS, yes, which I had been curious about for a while. And then also bought Mercury Meltdown Revolution for Wii, which is $20.
And how is that?
Mercury is really cool. I haven't played it a lot. Sorry. I haven't played it a lot. Just because of all the other games that I've got. But it's really interesting. The motion controls are perfect, I think. The main comment I would have is that it gets really hard basically right off the bat. Like, so hard that I'm sitting there looking at it like, I don't even know how to do this. Mm. Or if I do know how to do it, it looks practically impossible. Like, it would take nerves of, like, basically just perfect control to pull it off. What did you think, Kevin?
From the 30 seconds I played it?
Well, yeah, and you watched me a little bit, too, but...
Yeah, I died like 6 times in the 30 seconds I tried playing.
Yeah, it's freaking hard. It's really interesting, though. I mean, the graphics are pretty cool, and the physics are really interesting. Because, like, pretty much all the stages have just, like, drop-offs right off the platform. And so, like, you're controlling this blob of mercury. If it gets near the platform, like, a little bit of it will just trickle off. And that's gone forever. So, like, not only can you not just slide right off the level, you don't even really want to get close to the edges because you'll lose some of your mercury, and it makes it harder to do the rest of the level.
For some reason, I thought you were talking about Contra 4.
Oh.
That's what I was talking about.
Nice. Well, they kind of go hand in hand, because Contra 4 is friggin' brutal, too.
Oh, yeah.
And you played that for a few minutes before we started.
I didn't die 6 times in Mercury Meltdown Revolution.
Yeah. You would have if you'd played it for another minute, probably. Yeah, Contra 4, I haven't played it a ton. Like, I think I got to, like, the 4th level, maybe, and this is on easy. I just started on easy.
Oh.
Weren't you guys telling me that there's some, like, missing feature in easy?
Well, what it is the stackable weapon type. So
stack weapons?
Well, in normal mode, yeah, what it is that there's two power levels to each weapon. So if you collect 2 of them, then it goes to the 2nd level, and they're much, much more effective. So that's big...
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, and that's so on easy, everything is the powered level. So that kind of makes it a bit less interesting in terms of, like, it's more tense, like, trying to stay alive when you've got good weaponry, because, you know, if you lose it and you're going back to the more basic shit, it's going to be a total boner trying to get through it.
I didn't think the game could get more tense. I don't know. Oh, it's, yeah. My first thought was, if you took your hand and covered up the top screen of the DS, you might think I was playing Contra 3. And I'm not saying the graphics are bad. I'm saying, like, and I could probably watch that game for 5 minutes without realizing that it's on the DS, because it's so old school that it feels literally like they just haven't done anything to move the formula forward. Like, that game is straight out of 1992. It's so old school. I wasn't expecting it to be 3D or anything, but I expected it to have some pretty clever elements that kind of, you know, like, twists on the old Contra formula. Like
blowing
some...
on the microphone.
No, not like that. I'm talking about, in terms of, like, level design and enemy design and gun design, and it's really not. It's very faithful to the original Contras. And it's freaking hard, man. On easy. Yeah. It took me, like, I ran out of continues on the fourth level, and that's with 10 lives per continue.
It bitched me up.
Yeah, it's 10 lives and more continues. Yeah.
But, you know, now that I think about it, like, the original Contra and even Contra 3, I always played them with the Konami code. So
there was a Konami code in Contra 3?
Yeah, you got, like, 10 lives. And you didn't get 30, you got, like, 10. Oh. Yeah. It allowed me to get to the second level. So... I think I'm going to look for codes, because that's kind of just the way I know how to play Contra, and I think I'm going to just totally weak sauce and go for the easy way out.
Well, I suppose it is a nice way, like, because inevitably, as we've said before, it kind of requires that memorization a bit.
It does,
If you're going to play it, especially on normal, you know, it almost becomes choreography at times. And if you're not willing to put the time in to do that, it would be nice just to see the set pieces and the cool things that are in the game without having to do that. And you can probably do that to extent on easy. So I think it's a good idea that they did that. But I mean, if you are hardcore into this kind of stuff, which the target audience for this game, such as it is, would be, then the normal is the more rewarding, I found.
Yeah, I'm totally not hardcore enough for Contra 4. I thought maybe I was, or I could get into it, and I think I just, like, within 5 minutes I said to myself, I am not the audience for this game. But I bought it really cheap. I got it for like $18 or something. So I'm gonna stick with it for a while. But if I kind of get to the point where I feel like I don't really want to play it anymore, I might just trade it in and for yet again and get something else. I don't know. By the way, Kevin went and got the stack of empty DS cases. So uh-huh. I want to list off. These are the games that I lost.
This is the part of the Oscars where they show the pictures of the poor.
Oh my god! Really? It's bad. Okay. Puzzle. All right. Puzzle Quest, New Super Mario Brothers, Mario Kart DS, Brain Age 2, Phantom Hourglass, My French Coach, which is good.
Yeah, the 9.
Wee.
Professor Layton, Scourge Hive, and New York Times Crosswords.
Oh my god, that sucks, dude. Yeah. That's brutal.
So that's eight. That's tough. No, that's 9 games I lost. And these were my favorite games. These were like the ones that I kept with my DS because I thought at any particular time I might want to play one of these because they were
that's
my favorites.
Tough. Yeah.
So I now have these beautiful cases and the instruction books and everything, but there's nothing inside
of
them.
What a kick in the nuts. That's brutal.
It's very sad. So the other game, and I'm almost finished now, but the other game that I got last week was Zack and Wiki, and that'll come up in the second segment for sure. But I guess what I'll say about it now is, number one, I'm blown away by the graphics. I think it's beautiful. It's absolutely one of the best looking Wii games I've seen, and I just wasn't expecting that. I mean, I'd seen Kevin. He brought it over here one time, and I played it, but I'd forgotten just how good it looks. It's beautiful. It really is one of the best looking Wii games, and in just in general, like the whole design of the game, you really feel like they set out to make a Wii game, like a game specifically for the Wii that really made good use of what the Wii can do and really kind of pushed the system and did something nobody else is doing. And so if you're one of those like really hardcore Nintendo people who like to support third party software, and I think there are quite a few of them at our website.
And they already have their
own. This is one of the best things you could buy, and it's really good. It's really well made. It's hard, but it's very, very interesting. It's funny because when I got the game, I hadn't I basically got it just because it was cheap, because they just reduced the price on it. So it's $20 now from like EB and GameStop. And so that's the reason I bought it. But then I, when it came in, I started to think, hey, I bet my girlfriend would like this. You know, like, it's kind of a game. It's a good game to play with a girl. It's very cerebral and it's very cute. And so she was over when I basically popped it in the first time, and she looked at it, and the first thing she said was, oh, this is like Monkey Island. And perfect. She's amazing. So so immediately she was into it. And so basically we've played it together ever since then. So we haven't played it a lot because we don't spend a lot of time playing games with each other, but we've basically been playing it together. And
it has that feature where you, like, other people could pick up a remote and like do stuff on the screen or something. Is that right?
Yeah, it has like a Telestrator thing, which is funny. It's fun to mess with, but I'm not finding it to be very practical, because once you draw something on the screen, it's relative to the camera. So if the character moves away from where you drew, that thing moves away also. And so it just basically scrolls right off the screen. So if the other person is walking around pretty quickly, which usually she controls the character and I kind of make comments and we talk about the puzzles and work it out, but it seems like the drawings just sort of scroll off really quickly.
Yeah, it's nice if you're just trying to point something out, like if you want to say, no, that, not that one over there, the one to the right of that, like, you know, instead of going through that, you just circle it. But especially towards the end of the game, the stages just get larger, and they're, I think one of the problems with the game is the camera control, especially with the bigger stages. And so you really lose that ability of just being able to draw on the screen if the thing you want to draw is off edge.
Right. Yeah. So I haven't really been using that. Mostly it's just verbal communication. I mean, I'm right next to her anyway. So there's not many situations where I can't just say what I want to say anyway, but it's really cool because we're totally equal partners in the puzzle solving. I mean, she's very smart and the game is difficult. I mean, it's never really obvious what you're supposed to do. So you do kind of have to think about it, and it really helps to have another person there. And it kind of reminded me of when I was a teenager and I played Myst on my computer, and whenever I got stuck, I would call my mom in and say, Mom, look at this and tell me what you think. And she didn't know anything about the game or how it was played, but she would just kind of look at it and say, well, can you do this? Or what does this thing do? Did you try this? And just totally from a fresh blank perspective, she would give me ideas that would help me solve the puzzle. I thought that was so cool. And Zach and Wiki is like a really interesting update to that experience for me. That was like immediately made me think of those memories of playing Myst. But it's a great game to play with another person. And we get emails and questions all the time about people asking what should they play with their girlfriends. I think Zach and Wiki is probably the best example of anything I've seen on Wii, other than Wii Sports probably, to play with your girlfriend. Because it's very cooperative and it's a very simple thing to do together. And playing the game is essentially you talking about things and sorting it out together. That's really cool. Yeah. So, that's all I'll say about Zach and Wiki for now, because it's going to come up again in the second segment, which will start in just a minute. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm James Jones, features editor at NintendoWorldReport.com and editor of this podcast, Radio Free Nintendo. I'm coming to you to ask for your help. You see, episode 100 of RFN is approaching, and we're looking for ideas for what we should do in order to celebrate. However, I have my own personal project, and I'm asking you, our loyal listeners, to tell me about any moment in RFN history that you regard as being one of your favorite. And a good example is the oft-mentioned There's a Million of Them Wii prediction. However, it doesn't have to be something that made us look like blittering idiots. It can be an insightful topic we've discussed. It can be a amusing back and forth that took place, or it could be a stupid prediction. Anything and everything is fair game. So, if you can think of any episode where a segment was particularly amusing, please let me know at rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Thank you, and look forward to our 100th episode.
Okay, we're back with our second segment, and well, I guess we should start off really quickly with Virtual Console. This week we've got Renegade for the NES, which I think is sort of like a prequel to River City Ransom. and also Pokemon Puzzle League for N64, which is Tetris Attack or Paneled Upon. It's all the same thing with different coat of paint. Comments?
What?
Nice to see another N64 game.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
There you go.
Renegade, I think that actually, I think there's probably a better version out on the TurboGrafx-16, isn't there?
I don't know, but I think Renegade is kind of shit.
It is shit.
I haven't played it, but I've heard really bad things about it.
Yeah, it's pretty much right up there. It's kind of like an update to Kung Fu. That's what it's, that's, you know, it's just very, I mean, you are one guy walking along, a couple of guys come out, you punch them, kill them, keep walking.
Yeah, no, what you should get walking. Instead is River City Ransom, which I've played quite a bit of, and I think it's amazing. It's one of the most ambitious NES games I've ever seen.
Yeah, see, I've never played that, but I've heard it like this. It's like the mythical NES title.
Well, it's not mythical. It's on Virtual Console. You can get it for
I should actually
it's
mention
to me. I don't have it.
I should actually mention for our European listeners that if you're wondering what River City Ransom is in this country, this continent, it's called Street Gangs. For some reason, so super generic, super generic name. So you know,
Street
and it came
gangs.
Out sometime before it came out in the US. So if you're
Japanese
interested,
title's really funny too.
If you're interested in what River City Ransom sounds like, look it up as Street Gangs on the Wii Shop channel.
So anyway, I'm pretty sure Renegade is a not recommended just from hearsay. I'm not interested in spending my money to test it, but Pokemon Puzzle League I played it my first ever E3 back in 2000, and then I rented it when it came out, and I think it's a very good version of Paneled Upon. It's probably not as good as what's the DS version called?
Planet Puzzle League.
Planet Puzzle League, yeah. That's exactly the same, except it has like online play and a lot more stuff to it, and it's portable. Yeah. So for like twice the price, you could get the DS version. That's considerably better. But we should say the Pokemon elements of Pokemon Puzzle League add absolutely nothing to it.
That's not true. That's not true. They added ash to the side of the whole thing.
Yeah, it has a very, and I'm being serious, it has a very beautiful full motion video of the cartoon, and I think they made it specifically for the game. I don't know, maybe it comes from one of the movies or something, but there's like a 5-minute clip of animation at the beginning of the game, and it blew me away when I saw it on N64, because it was the kind of thing that you would see on PlayStation all the time because they had CDs.
Yeah,
but it was actually better quality than you would see on PlayStation, and it's like 5 minutes long, which is pretty long to put on an N64 cartridge. So that's probably the most memorable thing about it for me, is that it has this animation. I assume that that's included in the Virtual Console version. I would hope so. But, the gameplay has nothing whatsoever to do with Pokemon. It's just you have to sit through a lot of Pokemon sound effects while you play it. It's almost a detriment, really.
Sold.
It's a good puzzle game, though. I mean, if you like Paneled Upon, Puzzle Attack, Tetris Attack, whatever you want to call it, Puzzle League, it's just another version of that. I don't think it's the best version, but it's $10, so that may be a better value proposition than some of your alternatives. Okay, well, now let's get into the meat of the second segment, and that is about adventure games, and specifically we're talking about like basically point-and-click adventure games. I guess probably not all of these are point-and-click, but that's sort of...
Yeah, but before that they were like text-based, like you would type.
Right, yeah. But this is like a really old genre. It's like one of the original types of computer games going back to the early 80s or even late 70s. And I guess sometime in the mid 80s they started to sort of turn graphical, because originally they were like things like Zork. They were pure text.
Right. That's why they were one of the first genre games, because you could play them at the command line.
Right. And you could basically play them in DOS.
Right.
And they were easy to program because it was just all typing and algorithms. Like there's no graphical engines required, or no really interface. Like the interface is already built in, so all you had to do is type. But eventually in the mid 80s they sort of started to switch to graphical adventure games, and this is where they kind of got really interesting to me, I think. And the funny thing is, like, sort of in the mid to late 90s this kind of game really died. Like, I guess you could say like around the time of Myst was like kind of the final swan song of the PC adventure genre. Like, there were a few good ones that came after that, but they weren't very popular, and the whole genre sort of died off. And the interesting thing, and the reason we're talking about it today, is that it's sort of coming back on Wii. It seems like there's sort of a resurgence of it. It's coming back a little bit on PC with, like, Sam and Max, but the Wii, ever since it came out and people saw that you could point on the screen like a mouse, they're like, wow, we could bring back point-and-click adventure games from the PC, and it's actually starting to happen now. We've got Sam & Max, the first season is going to be released this fall on a disc. And then you've also got the Strong Bad, what is it, like the cool game for attractive people? I think that's what it's called. But that's all, the same company is making that. That's going to be for WiiWare. And you got Zack & Wiki, which is definitely in this kind of genre. You've got like that Agatha Christie game that we reviewed a couple weeks ago.
And then there were none. Yes.
Right. Yeah. And there, slightly and that's more. Not a, probably not a very good example. I think there's like a CSI game. That's
which is an even
much,
worse example.
Yeah. So like any genre, there are good examples and bad examples. But the point being that this kind of game seems like it's sort of coming back, and I thought it'd be interesting because a lot of Nintendo gamers probably are not familiar with these games.
Indeed.
I thought it'd be interesting to kind of go back and look at some of them. And Kevin is definitely an expert. But before we get to Kevin's list of adventure games that he brought, I wanted to ask: do you guys have any experiences that you can recall with this kind of game?
Yeah, I mean, I go way, 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 way back. So
yeah, because
yeah,
you're old.
I'm very old. So that's
just
the thing.
In general, you go way back.
Actually, yeah. Thank. I mean, actually, I was just asleep there. I got to take my meds, but. but yeah, I mean, I remember playing way back in the day. I actually one of the first games I played was Zork 3. I forget which one that was, because I think Zork 1 was
old.
The Underground Empire. Zork 2. I can't remember. I forget what Zork 2 was, the Wizard of Froboz, I think, and Zork 3. I can't remember what that was, but yeah, I just remember I really sucked, and I always got eaten by lurking Grus. So if you know what I mean by that, you've definitely played Zork.
Was Zork 3 graphical, or was it also just text like the original?
Yeah, it was text. All three of those are text.
Okay.
Yeah. I have it's funny because I have a special relationship with Zork, at least the idea of Zork, even though I never really played the Zork games. I think I saw them at a friend's house when I was young, and I was really impressed by just the writing, that the idea that these game developers were basically writers more than programmers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they could create this world that you could sort of see in your mind, even though it was all just writing on the screen. And it was essentially like a computerized version of like a choose your own adventure, but it's done much better than that. When I was learning to program in high school, like 10th grade, I got a TI-82 graphing calculator. And, you know, being a gamer guy, one of the first things I wanted to learn was, like, how can I program my own games? And I got a friend to teach me how to do some stuff. It was really simple. It was the kind of stuff that these guys back in the early 80s were doing for Zork. And actually, it was even simpler than that, because you couldn't type in what you wanted to do. You basically chose it from a menu. So I had to write all the options that were possible. But I ended up, my first ever game that I created, which there's very, very few, and they don't exist anymore, unfortunately. They've all been lost to the void. But the first game that I ever created, I called Zork, because that's the only thing I could compare it to. You know, it was a text adventure game that I created. And so you went up to this mansion, and you went inside of it, and there's booby traps all over. Like, everything, if you do anything wrong, you die, basically.
Yeah.
So it's like a trial and error thing. It's it wasn't very good. But the TI-82 had a little jack on the bottom that you could transfer code to other people with a cable. And so I was giving this game to all my friends, and they were playing it, and they got really into it. I think they were patronizing me a little bit, but they were actually kind of interested in it. So then I did Zork 2, which took place on a space station, and it was very similar to the first one, but I think there were kind of more options. There's generally more to it. It was a little more advanced. And then I did Zork 3, which is my crowning achievement. And Zork 3 was really cool because it had kind of this action or like a timed element to it. It wasn't really timed, but when you started the game, the game took place in Atlantis underwater. Like you're like in this domed city of Atlantis underwater, and you're trying to escape and you woke up with a bomb on your chest, and it had a counter, and the counter, it started at 99 seconds, or 99 units of time, whatever, it wasn't seconds, but, and it appeared, and you could, throughout the entire game, you could see how much time was left on that thing, and basically, any choice you made in any menu took off a random amount of time off the timer, so you weren't really sure how many moves you had left to beat the game.
Oh.
It was pretty well balanced, so that if you played the game properly and very efficiently, you would basically get out before the timer ran out every single time. Whereas if you made a lot of mistakes, you might get through there with some time left, but there's also a pretty good chance that you'd blow up before you got to the end. And the cool thing was, there's like a branching path where you could find some tools and actually dismantle the bomb. And once you did that, then the counter no longer appeared, and you were safe, and you had as much time as you wanted to beat the rest
of
the game.
That's pretty cool.
But if you beat the game before time ran out, but you didn't dismantle the bomb, the final scene was you'd blast off in your submarine back up to the surface of the ocean, but you would blow up on the way up there, so you died anyway.
This is giving me a spark of inspiration here. Developed by Jonathan Metz. Mm-hmm. Escape from New York, the text adventure. Come on, it's got it all in there.
I work on commissions, so we'll talk about it later.
So essentially, there's only one obscure way to not lose that you may not find even if you explore the game.
Yeah, I mean the game is designed to basically motivate you to try every possible thing, because it makes me appreciate things like GTA, I think, where they spend so much time creating all this content that most people will never see. Because, you know, with a text adventure, it's very laborious to write and to type in all of this text for every possibility. And so it kind of motivates you to design the game so that the player will eventually try every single alternative. And so
you had to sit through it and write it. He might as well sit through it and read it.
Exactly. Nice. You know, I had friends who would play the game over and over, and they would try different things. They would try a different route. And it was really popular among my little circle of friends in high school. But it's too bad those games are gone now. That's my Zork story. So I won't interrupt as much now.
Just get that out of the way.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I'm done.
So, Greg, you told me that you haven't really played any of these
games.
I have never played
an adventure game in my entire life.
This is going to be really educational.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's like you said at the top, in terms of a lot of Nintendo fans haven't played these kinds of games, and you know, I've been pretty hardcore Nintendo all my life, and you know, with the sort of back in the old days, especially of the Super Famicom and the Nintendo 64 that I had on Japanese import, it really put a squeeze on your budget for what games you were going to play. If you were going to play those games, you know, those core Nintendo games first. In my experience, you weren't going to have a lot left over. So, and then you get set in your ways, and you just go from there. So that's why it is kind of exciting that we've got this situation with Wii, where we're going to be seeing very different kind of set of genres are going to come to the fore compared with the fairly stable sort of predominant genres that were across, you know, N64 and GameCube, obviously with some changes like with 3D and stuff like that happened from the Famicom to the N64.
That's the thing, though.
Actually, there were some old adventure games that came out on Nintendo systems a long time ago.
Shadowgate.
Like, Radio Trivia, the last episode, John Lindemann, you were on there, and 2IP played music from Shadowgate.
Yep.
And that, it's not exactly the same, but I think it fits in the general area of these games. Did you ever play that, Kevin?
No, the only adventure game I ever played on the NES was Maniac Mansion.
Oh yeah.
And I really didn't like it. I think I rented it. And I only played it for a few hours because it was so annoying. Because there was still like a pointer, like you had a mouse, but you had to use the D-pad to move it around the screen, and it was just so frustrating.
Yeah, pretty clunky port from the PC.
Well, that's basically just what Shadowgate is. I mean, you used the D-pad to move the pointer around, and
Shadowgate's a little bit simpler than Maniac Mansion because the scenes are very static.
Right.
And you don't have a character. It's all done from first person, but it's basically puzzle solving and item manipulation. I mean, the gameplay is pretty similar, I think. Mm. But also, there was a version of King's Quest V released on NES. Really?
Why?
And it's the same situation with Maniac Mansion, though. Like, the interface is really bad. I think you have the icon that you move around, but, you know, King's Quest had this system where, like, you can right-click and it changes the symbol.
Right.
So it changes it from, like, instead of walking here, I want you to touch this or I want you to look at it.
Yeah.
And so on the NES controller, I think you had to push select to change what the icon was. And it was just really bad. And King's Quest has a lot of sort of timed puzzles where, like, there will be an enemy and you have, like, 3 seconds to pull out the correct item from your inventory and use it on him or else he'll kill you. And when the cursor is moving around really slowly, that becomes very frustrating.
Yeah.
So, but there were some options, but they're pretty obscure.
Sure,
I mean,
with the way things were back in the real bad old days of the import, you didn't really necessarily have that much money left over, as far as I was concerned, for stuff like Square Enix games or, you know, a lot of stuff that was very sort of core titles. So I found it pretty difficult. But I mean, you always heard good things about various games. I mean, Monkey Island was a big deal in Europe, for sure. That got a lot of press. Mm-hmm. You know, and you heard a lot of good things about what LucasArts did, and Blade Runner. There was a Blade Runner adventure game, was there, at some point, that I think was quite well regarded.
I mean, really, to hit the critical mass of these games, you had to be kind of playing on the PC between probably like 82 and maybe 88. That would have been the...
No, I would actually push that back to say 94.
Really?
Because there were some good ones that came out in the 90s.
Yeah, LucasArts hit their stride in the early 90s.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So, James, are you pretty familiar with this kind of stuff, too?
Yeah, I'm pretty familiar with this stuff, but it's been a long time, and I was still quite young when I was playing this stuff.
Which ones do you remember, though?
I played a lot of the LucasArts ones. I recall the Sam & Max ones pretty well. I know I played Full Throttle, but I don't really remember much about it.
Full Throttle was kind of like a more serious... Like, a lot of these games tended to have a more comedic bent to them.
Yeah.
Like almost like they were comedy-type games.
Right.
But Full Throttle was more of like a drama, almost. Like,
yeah,
drama-adventure game.
It was kind of dark. They had that other one that was rather dark, too. The Dig, I think.
Oh, yeah, The Dig. I remember seeing, like, I think magazine ads for The Dig, and I thought it looked so cool. It was, like, really sci-fi. I think it, like, took place on another planet, or maybe I'm confusing with a different one, but...
Right now, Amazon is recommending that I buy The Dig.
Nice. Yeah, it took place on a...
Was it like a moon or something?
Other planet. Yeah, something like that. But all those LucasArts games ran on the SCUM engine, which has actually seen ports to various other devices beyond the PC.
Right. Like your toaster.
Yeah.
If your toaster runs Linux, you can run SCUM games on there.
Yeah.
SCUM VM.
The big thing about The Dig was that it was the first one that was released on CD-ROM only. Because it had all sorts of content on it.
And Myst was like that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which Myst was a big one for me that I got really into. And then I actually had Riven on PS1, which is the sequel to Myst. And,
right.
Yeah,
it was the PS1 port was so bad. It's like it came on 5 or 6 discs, I think.
Nice.
And I remember, like, I had the way my room was set up back then when I was a teenager was that my PS1 was sitting on the floor, like directly in front of where I would sit on the floor to play my games. So I just constantly had the entire like booklet of CDs splayed out, because the way the game is designed, it's not like you play for the first 5 hours and then you put in the second disc, you play for another 5. Every island in the game is a different disc.
So every time you wanted to go from one place to another,
exactly. It was obnoxious.
Yeah, just think if you had to do that with Grand
Theft
Auto.
Like, in the span of 5 minutes, I would change the disc 3 times.
Yeah, like,
nice.
It was awful.
just think if you had to do that with Grand Theft Auto every time you drove across a bridge. You had to put in a different CD. Yeah. That'd be terrible.
I know, dude.
Oh, well, you know, I had Myst too, but mostly my memories come from the LucasArts ones, because I think they were regarded as being the people who took the genre to its apex, and then when they bailed on it is when the genre sort of fell apart, because I think they started making their move away from it when they started focusing more on the Star Wars genre.
Yeah.
And I think the game that was like the death blow to this was when they put together that god-awful Rebel Assault 2. which I also owned and am ashamed to have owned, but it did have it did have the beginning of the real life actors playing the entirety of the game, like we began to see in the arcade light guns.
Like Target Terror.
Yes, like Target Terror. But the acting was actually worse than you would probably see in Target Terror. Oh, it was beautiful.
Well, Kevin, you have some LucasArts games on here, don't you?
I never remember who made which game, because when I was a kid, I just didn't pay attention to the screens at the beginning of the game. I just clicked through them.
Yeah. I know they did Maniac Mansion and Monkey Island and Full Throttle.
Yeah, for sure. I actually had an Amiga. I have a lot of memories of playing stuff on there that... One was Zach McCracken and the Alien Mindbenders.
Yeah.
That one was pretty fun. I think I liked it because it was like an adult simulator. Like, you could be an adult for a while. You had an apartment, and you could, like, call people on the phone, and you had a credit card.
Wow. It's like GTA.
Yeah.
So nice. What's the aim of the game? Not to get foreclosed on?
No, it had a really, really weird plot with aliens, and you were a newspaper reporter. It was pretty crazy. One of my favorite games from the Amiga was in the Space Quest series, which is sort of parallel to the King's Quest series. Sierra made King's Quest and Space Quest, and also Police Quest. But I've never played any Police Quest games.
They did Gabriel Knight too, which I never played those. They were like horror adventure games.
Oh, okay. I want to play those because they'll scare me.
Yeah.
But Space Quest was like one of those genres that was or one of those series that was really funny. Like, they had a lot of comedic stuff in there, and it wasn't quite as difficult, I don't think, as King's Quest. So it was better for me because I got discouraged really easily when I was 10.
Yeah, King's Quest is brutal.
Yeah,
I had King's Quest 6 and 7 and 8. On PC, and 8 is the one that everybody hates because it's in 3D and it's more like an action game, but I actually liked it. I mean, it's definitely not the same as the other ones. It's sort of something different, but I did like King's Quest 8, but and actually 7, the problem I think was that 7 was where the puzzles got so ridiculous that you couldn't actually solve them anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it was totally... you just basically had to click on everything because there's no logic left in this
series.
That's
a real problem with the whole adventure game genre in general, is that, you know, the game developers will have this really complicated puzzle, and it just will be so, you know, obtuse as to how you're supposed to solve it, and you basically have to look it up, you know, or ask someone. Back before there was the internet, it was even more frustrating.
Right. That's how they added challenge to the games, because they didn't want it to be really obvious what to do, but it's like, it's really hard to balance that kind of thing, because it gets down to, like, where you're trying to predict how people will think
right.
when they play your game, and it's impossible to do. So I think, like, Zach and Wiki kind of deals with it with this hint system.
A lot of games had the hint system, too. They were never good. Like, Zach and Wiki gets a lot of shit for having really sort of bad hint system. But that's nothing new. The games, there was a game called Castle of Dr. Brain that was kind of like an educational adventure game. But it was actually reminding me a lot of Zach and Wiki, because you had to solve these puzzles and they were self-contained, whereas in most adventure games you would just collect items and use them anywhere in the world and walk around. But these were like little self-contained puzzles that you would solve in a sequence, and that's the way Zack and Wiki is too. But there was a hint system built into there where you found coins, and if you got enough, you could buy a hint. But the hints were always terrible. Like, they would tell you something that you already figured out, like the very beginning of the puzzle.
Yeah.
And Zack and Wiki has this similar problem.
Yeah. I remember, like, the first one of these that I probably really played was King's Quest VI, and it was really hard, and the reason I thought of it was because you were talking about, like, taking items all... Basically, you could use them anywhere in the world, whereas, like, Zack and Wiki is more self-contained puzzles.
Right.
But King's Quest is, like, definitely this entire world, and if you get an item anywhere, it could potentially be used anywhere else.
Yeah.
And it's not... And a lot of times you have to combine items or use them in a certain order, and it's not really clear how they go together.
There was this game called The Legend of Kyrandia, and in that game, or in The Legend of Kyrandia 2, you could literally combine any two items to make something else, but it usually just didn't make anything. You lost your two original items. That's like the epitome of that.
That's terrible.
That's just harassment.
Oh, God. Wow, that's like a cooking mini game, and you see in a lot of RPGs.
Right.
It's like
yeah.
you might make something good, but you're probably just going to waste your stuff, and so there's really no motivation to do it. I think actually, and you've played Dragon Quest VIII,
right?
But I think that's where Dragon Quest VIII really excels, because you put things into the pot, and basically it's either going to make something useful or it won't work at all, and it'll tell you pretty quickly that that recipe doesn't work.
Yeah.
So you can just, you're free to experiment, and there's really no penalty for trying to combine things. And I think so many other games really really mess that up, that potential feature. But yeah, there was, I remember King's Quest VII had this really cool system where you could pick up an item and you could like rotate it in 3D. It was a 2D mm-hmm. game. It had really beautiful like Disney 2D art to the graphics, but the inventory system was 3D. So you could pick up, say, like a pot and look at it in 3D, and you could move it around and rotate it, and a lot of times you would find things written on the back, or you would see like a hole that would give you right. a clue where another item could be put in there, and that aspect of it was really interesting.
Right, and Zack and Wiki actually has that too.
That's true, yeah.
You need to use it at the very beginning of the game to see how to open the umbrella.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
The little 2 button.
Right, but yeah. we just gave it away.
I remember. I would have had a hard time figuring that out, I think.
Yeah.
If you hadn't told me.
Yeah.
I just went ahead and told my girlfriend that when she picked up the umbrella. I'm like, hey, look at it. You see the number 2? That means you can press 2. Because I just, there was like a potential for like 5 minutes of frustration that I just didn't want to deal with.
Yeah.
There.
This might be a good time to mention I'm getting Zack and Wiki this week, so don't go overboard.
You poor bastard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You poor bastard.
I'm going to be breaking my adventure game duck with that one, but I do hope that you'd recommend it to a sort of odious misanthrope like myself, rather than just being complaining with their girlfriends.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it's the best entry level adventure game, because it's pretty difficult. But
well, the kind of the
really
puzzle
sure
element of it appeals to me. I mean, puzzle like in games appeal to me.
It would be good if the puzzles were well designed, but by and large, they're not. I mean,
I think most of them are. I disagree. I think most of the puzzles are actually really well designed.
I think a lot of the puzzles are stupid. I mean,
fight.
Or they operate in ways that they don't work for a reason that doesn't make any sense. I point to the big goldfish bowl puzzle, because this is the worst offender, where you had to get the lava in and then the water in. But if you put the water in first and then the lava, it didn't work. But it didn't tell you why that didn't work, and all you knew was that you had failed and you had to completely restart the mission. But the game didn't even tell you that unless you asked for a hint. So you could just wander around aimlessly if you run out of hint items, not realizing that I should probably go to the hint thing and try and ask her if I can even continue. Because it was just perplexingly obnoxious that these sort of puzzles just had this bizarre where you have to do it this way first and this way, even though logically both would make sense.
So, I mean, did you prefer kind of like Professor Layton's just like out-and-out logic puzzles to those kinds of more like kind of they have their own rules rather than just the rules of intuition?
Well, see, I don't mind that so much, because, I mean, I encountered that a lot when I was playing adventure games way back, you know, with Sam and Max and things. But they didn't kill you if you, you know, screwed it up. You could try again. In this particular instance, you're just dead. I mean, it's
well, that really depends on the specific game, James, because King's Quest will kill you happily in 5,000 different ways.
Yeah.
I mean, it
so
might.
So it just depends on the game there.
But I feel like in this case, a lot of times it wasn't so much you were killed by, you know, dangerous things. It was your progress was killed by a puzzle that doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense. And since you can't save, you know, mid objective, a lot of times you had to replay an entire level.
That's what the golden ticket's for. You use that and it puts you right back
where
you left off.
But they cost increasingly high amounts of money, and you know,
well, maybe you shouldn't die as much.
Maybe
James.
You shouldn't suck as much, James. Stop sucking. That's the answer here, James.
No, yeah, I mean, okay.
It sounds like you might have a point, James. I haven't played it enough to relate to your problem.
You know, I really enjoyed a lot of the puzzles that were more towards the end of the game. In like the haunted house area was sort of, I thought they had the best puzzles.
Yeah, it got better in that respect. The ice boss was another one that was really annoying.
With the mirrors?
Yeah. Because you couldn't really get a good perspective of where the thing was going to go until you fired it, and if you fired it three times, you were dead.
Yeah, that's another problem with the camera in this game. I kind of almost wish you could play it with the nunchuck and use the nunchuck to control the camera. That's I was thinking
like a good idea.
Yeah, for in my head, like the ultimate Wii based point and click adventure would be similar to Zack and Wiki, where you're using the pointer to point at things on the screen, but be more either be like first person, like almost Metroid style, where you're controlling your person with the nunchuck with the analog stick, or to have it be like Zack and Wiki, but just be able to control the actual camera itself, third person, with the stick.
And what the guys at Penny Arcade said about Zack and Wiki is they really wanted just direct control over the characters. They wanted to be able to plug in the nunchuck and just use the joystick to move Zack.
Yeah, it was kind of dumb that you had to go here and wait for him to walk over there.
Yeah. But actually, Kevin, what you're saying about the first, like the Metroid-style first-person approach, has actually been done in Shadowgate 64. Oddly enough, it was a really. I never actually played it. I was curious about it, and it's a game that I'd be interested if it ever came to Virtual Console. But it was a first-person 3D adventure game, very similar to the original Shadowgate or to these games that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But it was in first-person, and it was really bizarre at the time because first-person was, and it still is, so associated with first-person shooters. And I think Shadowgate 64 got a lot of criticism for the pacing of it, because it's a slow-paced game where you kind of have to look around and find things and then point at them, and it's all inventory management. It's not an action game at all, but people had this stigma where if it's in first person, it should move quickly and it should be more responsive and whatever.
Well, the original Shadowgate
kind of got a lot of flack for that. But
the original Shadowgate was in first person too, so I mean, it made sense at the N64 iteration.
It was in static first person.
Yeah,
just
but
like
it was
a series of scenes,
like Dungeon Master.
Yeah, but it still made sense that it was first person considering its lineage.
Absolutely, yeah, but it was a very unusual game design at the time, and
yeah.
I think it still is. I don't think there are really very many games like that at all.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think.
There's
of
a
one.
Game sort of like that. That was on the PC. My friend Matt back home was really obsessed with this game. It was a LucasArts. No, it wasn't LucasArts. It was based on Jurassic Park, and it was called like Trespasser. Yeah, it was called Trespasser, and it was a first-person game. It wasn't really a shooter. It was more like a physics-based Half-Life 2 kind of thing, where you're like basically instead of a gun held out in front of you, you had a hand. And you use the mouse to control this hand, and you like reached out with your hand to pick up objects and manipulate them. It was sort of a puzzle game, like you stacked up things, or you had to pick up items and move them over here or move them over here. And I think it was sort of more of a concept, a good concept than a good game.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I just thought of that when we were talking about Shadowgate 64.
So maybe it's time for Shadowgate Wii.
Maybe it is. I mean, it seems totally possible. And I guess in some ways, Metroid Prime sort of picks up some of these elements in first person. I mean, there's a lot of puzzle solving.
There's a lot of inventory management.
Person. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is a lot of sort of environment manipulation and trying to understand spatially what's going on in this room. Like, how does this thing over here relate to this thing, and how can I get them to connect? Or, you know, there's something I can do here. I just don't know what. And I mean, I think that's part of what appeals to the Metroid Prime games a lot to me is that sense of trying to solve these puzzles in an environment. And it is done from first person. So I guess that it hasn't completely died out, that idea. But even Metroid is very unusual. So
yeah.
There aren't many games like that.
And of course, with the Wii remote and everything, it's that, you know, like you said in Metro, you got that kind of natural kind of, oh, it's an extension of your arm or all this sort of stuff. So interacting with environments from first person is something that you think would be pursued in the future to a greater extent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was sort of done in Metroid Prime 3 a little bit. And it sounds like it's going to be part of, like, well, there are some games coming out that sort of go into that too. But Kevin, I guess maybe we can wrap up by, would you like to pick out like one or two of these games you haven't talked about yet that are just really strange or really, really funny? Anything that sticks out for you?
I think we talked about them most already. I recommend Space Quest 3 if you're going up and picking up really old games.
Yeah.
There's actually on homestarrunner.com, there's these parody text adventure games called Thy Dungeon Man. They're actually really funny, and they're not really based on the Homestar Runner characters either. So if you want to get a taste of what those old school text adventure games were like, you could just go to Homestar Runner and look it up. I thought they were pretty good.
And then you showed me Peasant's Quest also.
Oh right, and that's more of a King's Quest like graphical type of but they're sort of a mocking style.
Yeah, and it's free, so I mean, it's totally something. If you're interested, you could go check it out. But Peasant's Quest, I think, is such a skewering parody of King's Quest that if you haven't played the games that it's making fun of, it's not going to make much sense.
Right.
And it's really hard. It's even harder than King's Quest.
Right, on purpose, because they're making fun of how hard King's Quest was.
Right. Yeah.
Right, but they've done that by making the game even harder. And
yeah.
I played Peasant's Quest for like probably 2 hours the day that Kevin told me about it, and I made almost no progress. It was really frustrating. So it is funny, but at the same time, it is just plain frustrating. So I don't know if it's best thing.
I don't think I recommend a Peasant's Quest for a first timer. But
yeah.
But
if you're a veteran of this kind of game though, and you want to go try one for free, you should check out Peasant's Quest. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, I think that wraps up our discussion. But hopefully, we've enlightened some old school Nintendo fans about PC adventures and point and click adventures. And it looks like it's going to be a pretty interesting year of this genre on the Wii.
With WiiWare.
Yeah, WiiWare.
Sam and Max, and hopefully
that series will continue to come out on Wii and become a little more integrated with the platform. And hopefully they do a good job.
One thing I want to point out to some of our more shady characters who own Wiis. Is that there is a homebrew version of the Scum engine that I think just recently got a beta that will allow you to play most of the, if not all, of the games built on LucasArts Scum engine on your Wii with the Wii remote.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
So, wow. Like, do you have to, like, hack your Wii to do it, though?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be really nice if they could do all that through a browser and then make it compatible with the Opera browser so you could play that stuff through the Wii without any special equipment.
Yeah, but you'd still need the game.
Right, yeah, which is not really legal.
Yeah. See, I wouldn't be surprised if at some point LucasArts does decide to dig back into that catalog and just pull out all, just write a Scum engine and then just put the games on a disc, but
it seems fairly easy to do.
I know at least one game, LucasArts, or I think it is LucasArts, that is freeware for Scum. It's Beneath a Steel Sky, it's called.
Right.
And actually, it comes with the Scum engine on Linux. That's the only time I played it is on Linux.
Yeah,
that's guilt-free if you want to check that one out, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally legal. All right, well, we need to wrap it up. It's been a long show, but I thought that was a pretty interesting topic that you might not expect to hear on a Nintendo podcast, but it is related. So, yeah, hopefully by the end of the year we'll have a lot more fans who are kind of more familiar with this. And if you are looking forward to stuff like Sam and Max and the Strong Bad game and stuff like that, you know, you might want to go noodle around on your PC and go find some of this stuff. Some of it is available legally for free. I think you could probably pretty easily find like a CD collection of King's Quest games for like $10 on Amazon or eBay. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's pretty low risk genre to get into because it's so old and it's not very popular anymore. So a lot of the games are just happy to be played by someone. you might want to go check it out. Of course, you can also pick up Sam and Max on PC for like GameTap and stuff.
And I think one of the, they usually have at least one of season one up on GameTap as a free demo.
Oh, cool. So you can check that out.
So you can actually play that entire chapter. But they are interlinked, so you might not get some of the jokes that they've brought up from previous chapters.
Well, I was going to say, like, I would hope that it's, like, the first chapter.
Well, so it changes from time to time.
Okay.
But they're still quite funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the Wii port of that. Although I could easily play it on my PC, but I think it'd be more fun to just sit on my couch and veg out to it that way, you know, and then it's easier to play with other people also.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause these are fun games to talk over with a friend and just kind of sit there and put your heads together on it.
Yeah, that's how I played through my first several of these was with my first girlfriend. I would go over to her house and I would just play through like King's Quest VI and she would watch me and tell me what to do.
Magical moments.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we're going to wrap up the show then. We didn't have any listener mail this week, but we'd love to hear from you. That is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And we're putting together ideas for episode 100, so you can start getting excited for that. It's in 2 weeks. Scary. Whoa. I guess I should start working on it.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
All right. Well, thanks to the crew, as always, and thanks to our special guest, Kevin.
No problem.
And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Later.
Later.
Recording.
Let's all make sure we're doing it.
I'm controlling.
What was that? Just do that the entire recording.